Once and for all, said the prisoner, I adjure you to set me free. By all fears and all loves, by the bright skies of Overland, by the great lion, by Aslam himself, I charge you.
Welcome to the Chronicles of Podcast, where we are doing a chapter-by-chapter deep dive into the Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis. I'm Kel.
And I'm Chase.
And thank you so much for joining us today. You know, appreciate you guys giving us a little bit of break during the holidays. Everyone's a little busy, and so we took some time off as well. Yes, but just a reminder that a Merry New Year, Chase. It's 2023. You know, in fitting 2023 fashion, we're in the 11th chapter of the sixth book, which, you know, math. But just a reminder that today we are talking about the sixth book in the series, The Silver Chair. But general spoiler warning for the whole Narnia series, as well as a heads up that we do go on the tangents into other stories we enjoy, and we'll do our best to give spoiler warnings for anything along the way. It's too far out there. But today we are discussing The Silver Chair, Chapter 11, In the Dark Castle, which could also be titled The Chapter Where You Actually See the Silver Chair.
Yeah, yeah. The only sentence, I think the words silver chair get said twice. And
it is brief. Good. And yeah. Again, a misnomer for this book, I believe. But, you know.
I mean, I do like the title The Silver Chair more than like
it's a great title.
Serpent.
Sure. Green it Witch. Is a great title for a book. I just wish that The Silver Chair was a bigger deal. Yeah, but Chase, before we get too much into analysis of all this, would you like to give us a summary?
I would love to. So if you remember, we were in the Dark Castle is a strong word. We were in the prince's room and the gang
underworld.
Underminer. So the gang sat down and ate with the knight, who explains he has no memory of his past before the Dark World. Crazy. Which, I mean, honestly, do any of us remember anything before Thor Dark World? But he assumes that the queen saved him from some evil enchantment, since he has an enchantment now, where every evening he goes wild and turns into a snake. Of course, he doesn't remember anything, so he takes his lady's word for it. She tells him that he will be cured of this once she crowns him king of a land in the overworld that has already been chosen for him. At this moment, the queen was at the diggings, where they were tunneling to the place where they could break through, take their enemy by surprise, slay their chief man, and the knight could be crowned within the day. Eustace pointed out that this would be rough luck for their enemies, and the knight found this funnier than it was really made sense in a joke, but Jill said that it wasn't funny at all. He would be a wicked tyrant with that thinking. But the knight assured her that he wouldn't be a tyrant because his lady would be there to tell him what to do. And she was great. In his mind, the queen had saved him from 1,000 dangers and even takes him out riding in the overworld sometimes because he's got hobbies too. Though when he goes, he has to keep his face covered and speak to no one, since she had learned through magic that speaking to people would hinder the spell being broken when he gets to the overworld. After their meal, the knight was in a less jovial mood since his enchantment hour was near, and soon he would be bound to a chair and go crazy. Scrub asked what would happen to them when this happened, since they would prefer not to be thrown in a dark jail cell. The knight said, that's cool, only the queen was usually allowed to see him in his enchanted state, but they could have the choice of either waiting his apartments on the other side of this door that just conveniently appeared, or sit with him in his ravings if they like. The three entered into his apartments briefly and talked about what to do. They decided, let's go back, see what we can learn. And they found when they went back that the main entrance has been shut and the knight has been bound to a silver chair. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nod, nod, silver chair. He told them the fit was about to start. Whatever they do, don't unbind him no matter what he says. He'll say anything to get them to let him free, and then he'd turn into a snake, and oh, you just don't want to see it. But then the knight began to moan and struggle in his bonds, groaning about enchantments and being buried alive and dragged down into the blackness. He then turned to them and said, quick, to cut the cords and release him. Every night the enchantment wears off, and he is only sane for this hour. But if they unbind him from the chair, it'll last. He'll stay sane. He will not become a serpent. He's being held prisoner, and if they let him go, he can take vengeance on the Underland and the sorceress who has kept him prisoner. They thought, this is just a frenzy beginning. He said this would happen, and they didn't want to release him. But when he asked them by Aslan to do it, they heard this and wondered, is this what Aslan meant when he said that the first person who says but to do something by my name, do it? Could Aslan have really meant unbinding a lunatic just because it was Asana's name? But Puddleglum made the point that, look, Aslan didn't tell Pol what would happen, only that she should obey the sign. So they grabbed the swords, cut him free in the name of Aslan. The knight stood, strode across the room, grabbed his sword, turned, and smashed the chair. Then he looked to the three and exclaimed, oh, hey, Puddleglum, you're a Narnian Marshwiggle. Crazy. Turns out the knight did know of Narnia and revealed, in fact, he's Prince Rillian of Narnia. Who would have thought? Who could have guessed? He had only forgotten this under the spell. He asked who they were, and they said they were sent by Aslan to find him, that Caspian, his father, was very old and may die soon because he's on a boat, and we all know what that means. And then the prince had been gone for over 10 years. They then heard footsteps. Rillian said to follow his lead, and he threw open the door for some reason. That's it. That's where it ends.
Hey, love me a C.S. Lewis cliffhanger.
Yeah, love. And then he opened the door. That's it. Cool.
Good. Love it. And Chase
knows how to write action, this guy.
You must understand, Chase, that I know nothing of any podcast that happened before this. Or wait, sorry. Of anything that happened with the prince's life.
I mean, both are true. Could I
immediately check out as soon as these podcasts are done recording?
Yeah. Please, no one ever hold us to remembering what we say on this.
There's a good chance that I've said the same further up and further in 18 times.
I mean,
don't know.
Honestly, wouldn't blame you.
Wouldn't blame me. But we come upon our knight, quote unquote, as he's providing all of these like prisoners with a pretty decent meal. Like, he's giving them pies. Like, he's giving them some ham, some salad, some cakes. Like, very good host for prisoners.
Yeah, I mean, before the spell is broken, honestly, Rillian kind of has like chill frat bro vibes. Like,
I think that's fair.
He's chill, he's friendly, but also sometimes he says things that just kind of make you roll your eyes and cringe a little bit.
Still a frat bro.
Yeah, he's still a frat bro, but like he bought a six pack and a pizza, so you're good.
Yeah, the whole time that he is under this enchantment, really, and I know you're going to hit on this later, he is just so dumb. And it's a tough thing where it's like, it's not his fault necessarily, because obviously he's under a spell, he's under enchantment, but like you hear him say words and you're like, how are you going along with this? Because he's basically like, hey, I don't remember anything, but I'm so glad because this one lady who found me, she knows everything. She told me all the things that I don't know. And yeah. Also, like she says, I'm under a spell that only she can break. If that's true, wouldn't it be a fair assumption, Chase, that she is the one that cast said spell?
I mean, look, you're a youth pastor. We've all known that, like, dude in high school who gets his first girlfriend, and it's like he's never had a thought for himself. He just kind of gets led around.
Cue the boyfriend, the fake dream boyfriend in Inside Out, where he's like, I would die for Riley. That's Prince Rillian under enchantment.
But will he copy himself thousands of times to make a tower?
If he could. He would do that because he's more or less going to try to tower into Narnia and bury it from the underside. Like, who knows? But yeah. He's like, I'm under this spell. And wouldn't you know it? Like, there's an hour each night where I just like go crazy and they tell me that I turn into a snake. I've never seen myself as a snake. I've never had snake-like impulses. I'm never aware of any of this. But this lady who says that I'm under a spell and that only she could break, she tells me that I'm a snake. And I've never harmed her nor any of the people here, but they tell me that I'm a crazy serpent that goes crazy.
Man, I'd like our listeners to know that if you find yourself in a situation where for like an hour a night you can't remember what's happening and you're just happy you haven't hurt anybody yet, you can get help. There's AA. There's options out there for you.
Took a turn there. But he also says he would rush upon his dearest friends to kill them. He doesn't have any dear friends, Chase. He doesn't remember anything.
His girlfriend's his dearest friend.
And but he hasn't killed her. Wouldn't he have killed her?
Because he's tied to a chair so that she can tell him what to think.
How would they have figured this out?
This actually seems like a pretty, pretty solid situation. Look, he's going to be king someday, Cal.
Okay, let's get to this point then. Right?
I've chosen to take her side at this point.
You can play devil's advocate, i.e. you are the advocate for the literal devil here, but sure. He goes, yeah, don't worry. I'm going to be able to go to this land where my lady has selected it. And I'm the only person who gets to be king of this land. And we're just going to conquer these people. Why are people going to accept you as king? Because you're already it. You're the heir.
I mean, the idea that they're going to conquer and then crown him king as like an usurper is like, that makes sense as like a pitch. It's just also like the irony of, no, you're literally already next in line. Like your dad's like on his death boat. You're going to be king soon. Either way.
I like the phrase death boat, but then
he sleeps on a boat, Eustace, bed. It's his death boat.
Eustace and Jill and them are basically like, that's kind of brutal. You're just going to like kill all these people and conquer them. Like I'm sure that they're probably not very fond of that. And he's like, huh, never thought of it that way. Back to the story.
So this like tripped me up as I was reading the book. Like how, like there's plenty of things that Rillian says that's like, oh, but like you're a little spaced out. Like you're not the brightest bulb in the box. But like the fact that he found it so funny when, so like we said, Rillian like explains like, oh, we're gonna conquer this land. I'm gonna be crowned king, and Eustace says, well, it's a bit of rough luck on them, isn't it? And it's like the first joke he's ever heard. Like, Rillian just like, it's like, oh, man, you're the smartest, so witty, ha, ha, ha. I guess you're right. It will be tough on them when I murder their families. Like, this is, like, if you're going to write a joke in a book that, like, the characters in the book react to, make it funny. Like, make it an actual joke that has like a structure to it, like a punchline.
Because I don't think this is intended to be a joke. I think that's Eustace going like, that's not good. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think it's just kind of like a dry, like, oh, well, I mean, I'm sure they wouldn't see it that way. Or like, I wonder, just the fact that like he finds it funny, but like it's never made clear as a reader like why he would find it funny, other than just like being the worst.
Another thing, Well, and then immediately after this, another thing that's funny but not funny is C.S. Lewis, you know, making sure that we know that Jill is not a very good feminist, and being like, well, you know, I don't think, you know, where we come from, people don't think highly of like men who get bossed around by their wives.
He does put her in her place there. That was funny. That one was funny.
He's like, you'll think differently when you have your own husband.
Yeah. It's a... I mean... Yeah, Jill's all over the place. Like, she's the only one who's openly like, I don't like this dude. He's a bad hang. But at the same time, like, she becomes a bad hang by being the person who just has to complain about how bad a hang they are.
It's fair.
But yeah, that was funny where he's just like, man, you wouldn't think that way if you were the one who was telling your husband or boyfriend or whoever what to do. But yeah.
Yeah. It's just again, it feels like another little like slapped in like little political or social commentary there by C.S. Lewis. But
he's got to like, do it every now and then. He's got to remind us that he's a dude writing in the 50s at least once every two or three chapters.
And then again, you go back to Dumbrillian and being enchanted here and being like, man, look how great my lady is. She, to get me used to the sun, leads me out there, but make sure that, you know, my face is covered because sunlight. And like, okay. And it's like, no, she's
great.
Leading
me. She lets me leave the house as long as I'm on a leash and have a blindfold on. It's great.
Yeah. And like, she's found out by art magical that this would hinder my deliverance from the grievous enchantment I lie under. How has she discovered this? She's clearly magical and a sorceress. And like, he's like, isn't this lady great? And Puddle Glum's like, sounds like a nice lady indeed, like very sarcastically. And he's like, me too. I agree with you. It's like, man, you do not understand sarcasm, my friend. Yeah,
it's a tough one for a guy.
And then like C.S. Lewis writes in a little like aside where it's like, I don't know what really is, but they have like a little mini conversation with what, like, Rillian is still there, I assume, but they just huddle together real fast and they're like, this dude is an idiot. He's so stupid. He's dumb. And then he's like, hey, I'm actually about to go crazy right now. Wouldn't you like to either go in that room over there or you could just stay?
Yeah. Whatever. Hey, look, I'm about to have to be tied to a chair, but like, you guys can still hang out, right?
y'all down? And they're like, well, you know, maybe we should just leave and could we stay? And he's like, well, usually only the queen sees me. Isn't that convenient?
Yeah. She's the only one who's not going to like think less of him for the crazy stuff he's saying.
She accepts him for him, Chase, yeah. Which is a raving lunatic snake.
No one understands me except for the other snake lady.
No one understands me except for the person who says that they understand me when I don't have any memory of my life, which is great. And so they're like trying to decide like, hey, should we go in this other room? Should we stay? And Puddle Glum is like, bro, we need to stay. Like, he's Detective Puddle Glum over here, is like, dude, we need information. This is clearly something is off and we need to figure out what's going on. So let's just hide for a second and then come back. And they, you know, hear him come. They like hear the little like gnomes come up and tie him up, and they walk in and Chase. Hallelujah. It's been 11 or 10 and a half chapters. And we finally see our silver chair.
For a moment.
For a brief moment, for about 2.5 pages, I'd say. Yeah. You get silver chair.
You know, if only every book was named after a piece of furniture in the room when the crux of the story happens, kinda.
Harry Potter and the cupboard that he lived under.
Harry Potter and the pillars in the dungeon under the castle when he killed that snake.
I'm trying to think now, going through each book, of like what you would name the random thing that Harry spends a minor amount of time. Harry Potter and the Hippogriff's executioner.
Man, Harry Potter and the Centaur's ride out of the dark forest.
Ooh, good one. I like it. We could keep going with this game, but I feel like we should probably get back to Chronicles.
This is more fun.
It might be. No, we still got some good stuff in this chapter. No, but we see the silver chair, and he's like, oh, what's up, friends? Come on in. And he doesn't wave them over because he's tied up. But I imagine him like kind of whipping his hat over. He's like, hey, Come over here.
Yeah. It's just fun and casual.
He's just fun and casual. He's like, don't mind me in my shackles as I'm tied to this really ornate, cool silver chair. And he's like, BT Dubs, forgot to mention this. If you're going to be here, it's really cool. It's chill. But I'm going to go crazy. And I'm going to try to say anything possible to get you to let me out of these bonds. And like, just don't. And they're like, great. No matter what you say, we're not going to let you out. And he's like, perfect. And then you start to see the enchantments going away. And he's like, ugh, magic, enchantments, evil. it's like, I'm not even really that exaggerating there.
I mean, yeah, I think the actual line is enchantments, enchantments, heavy, tangled, cold, clammy web of evil magic.
He's struggling. His head's moving back and forth because that's the only thing he can move. He's like Wesley in Princess Bride when he's, you know, just barely alive again. And he's like, oh man, he's in. What we begin to see is the audience. Clearly, this is Prince Rillian. We are, you know, as the reader, I think are meant to understand that this is Rillian.
Before, man, I would hope so. It'd be wild.
I would hope so.
If you got to this point and weren't five, you know what was happening.
If you were unaware at this point, I challenge you to think deeper about your reading. Because if you're looking at the queen and going, wait, she's not just a well-dressed green lad, like laden queen. She's actually the serpent. Like,
no, oh, sorry, don't matter in books, Cal.
Especially when you use the word poison green. But we see him coming to lucidity. So more or less, without like speaking this into existence, what we see from the like, you know, what happens here is, for whatever reason, in this small window of time, the queen's enchantments don't work. And so that's why he's tied up to this chair. And that's when he's actually lucid. For plot reasons, 23 hours of the day, he's under a spell.
Yeah. But
1 hour is really tough. Look, as long as
her magic is really good, like maybe 90% of the time. And then that 10%, you got to like put some extra safety measures into place.
I'm hoping in the next few chapters, we get some understanding of this where it's like, hey, this silver chair charges his enchantment up. It's like when your phone is dying and you plug it in while you go to sleep. That's the silver chair.
Oh, yeah. And he's got the like the cordless.
He's the docking port.
You just have to.
He just sits and it's like beep, beep. And like, yeah, you know,
but
he,
because he's 10 years old at this point, like it doesn't quite work right. So you got to strap him to it. So it's at the right angle so that the charge actually takes place. Yeah,
sure.
I'm familiar with charging phones.
And so I'm hoping that, but I also have learned enough about C.S. Lewis over the past couple years to realize that he's definitely not going to do this. He's just going to go, man, this silver chair is sweet. People are going to love it. We see the prince coming to lucidity.
The fact that we didn't, I mean, sorry to.
No.
The fact that we don't get like a 2-page long description of this chair is actually shocking considering everything else in the last.
Well, Chase,
reading.
If he took 2 pages to talk about this chair, that's 2 pages he could not talk about walking.
You're right.
So
there's a non-zero chance that that's what not the next chapter, but the chapter after the next chapter is going to be.
C.S. Lewis, his inexistent editor was like, maybe we should talk about this chair. And he was like, you're fired.
We're going to name the book after the chair, but good God, we will not describe it. Don't you dare. Don't even ask about it. Honestly,
his publisher was originally like, we can't call this book Walks Through the Underland. And he was like, fine, call it the silver chair.
This is Prince Caspian Dark World.
The Dark World? Oh, no.
It's this the is the one where they align all the planets, right?
Yeah, bingo. No, we actually do really like this book and this chapter in particular. But he starts coming to lucidity and he's like, quick, please. This is the only time I'm actually sane. Please cut me free. I'm not your prisoner. I have no qualms with you. Please. And he's like, I don't know who you are, but you are not the Earthman. You're not the witch. So please let me free. And they're like, no, steady, steady. They're holding to their word.
And you said this would happen. So why would we do it? Yeah.
Right. And so he's starting to get mad. He's like, I will smite all of you. I will kill all of you. Hand me that sword over there so I can do that. And they're like, no, not going to happen. And like, then Chase, wouldn't you know it? After all this time, we finally get the last of the signs from Aslan, where he says, once and for all, I adjure you to set me free by all fears and all loves, by the bright skies of Overland, by the great lion, by Aslan himself. And they're like, oh, well, that changes things.
Well, since you have the password.
And like, they're like, well, this is a dilemma, because we said we wouldn't free him. But Aslan said that's how we would know who the prince is. So this is a dilemma. Should we free him? Because what if he's still crazy?
Yeah.
And he just goes crazy and kills us.
There's a fair parallel here without... I'm going to try to walk the edges of this to not lose us 80% of our listeners. I think there's a fair parallel here for whenever like your faith, your belief system bucks up against other strong values you hold, and having to decide, okay, well, like
what's more important?
We're Christians. If Jesus calls us to love our neighbor in this specific way, how does that interact with the fact that my job or my political preference or like whatever, like my family, like just the way we've always done things, like when those things buck up against each other, like am I actually in it the way that I said I was, or like am I gonna go with kind of the flow, the momentum of what life would just generally call for? And I think that's an interesting like dynamic that C.S. Lewis plays with here of like, okay, well, what do you do when the commands that you're given by Aslan interfere with the logic of your immediate circumstances and the fight or flight instincts that are in your gut?
Absolutely. And I mean, truly, I think that's a theme through this book, right? Of going what are you going to listen to more? The words of Aslan, i.e. the words of Jesus, the word of scripture, or what you think is best? Hey, I'm cold and I'm hungry. Let's go to that giant's house where it's warm and there's food. Hey, well, didn't Aslan, don't worry about what Aslan said. Hey,
oh, I forgot. Like,
you know, hey, shouldn't we have been paying attention to what these words were supposed to say? No, I we need to just get out of this, right? Like, I think you're, you know, spot on. And the whole point of all of these things, like had they gone and talked to Trumpkin / Caspian before he left on the boat, it would have been an ordeal of going like, hey, what would be easier for you to like hide over here so that you're not, you know, seen as like an assassin or a threat, or to go and follow the words of Aslan? Each time Aslan's words buck up against what they think is best and what they think is most comfortable. And this is the only time where they go, hey, we have to follow Aslan's words. And they're like, fine. And so Eustace and Puddleglum, they free Rillian. And immediately he stands up, crosses the room, grabs his sword. And just as you think he's going to kill Eustace and the crew, nope, kills the silver chair. So goodbye, silver chair.
Takes out the biggest enemy of the book so far.
you done good, kid.
It's a good thing we knew a lot about that silver chair before he got
your
rid of
screen
it.
Time. Incredible. I mean, you see those like classic things where it's like people who won an Oscar with like the lowest amount of screen time, like Anne Hathaway and Les Mis is like famously like 15 minutes and won, you know, best actress. Anthony Hopkins and Silence of the Lambs is like, you know, something around there. Right? But it's like this silver chair, star of the show.
Yeah.
2.5 to 3 pages.
Man. I mean, yeah. MVP. Never forget. I mean, doing
the most with the least, you know, his plus minus on the court is incredible.
I mean, to be fair, went out with a bang. He hits it with the sword and it like flashes and makes a noise and then like just kind of collapses in on itself.
Yeah, because it's a wooden chair. I think
this was an inflatable chair.
It's one of those like little like blow up chairs. And
yeah.
It's like now this makes this whole scene way funnier. Because it's this giant like
silver colored pool float.
This is a strong like knight who is like capable of swinging swords tied to an inflatable chair. And he's like, ugh, my doom.
Man, when this podcast spins off into a sketch comedy series where we just recreate these books with zero budget, that's the way we're going. That's the way we're going for sure.
Everyone's gonna be like, "You can get out of this chair so easily," and he's like, "No, I'm stuck."
This buried alive darkness enchantment.
This podcast would also be so much funnier if people could see us. Because right now we're struggling against chairs that no one can see.
Man, thank God that no one can see us, because I think the last time that I showered before we recorded rather than after was when I
lived. Chase hasn't showered in 3 years since we've been doing this podcast.
Honestly, look,
it's been a rough time.
But yeah.
Don't worry about me. It's not your story. It's not your story.
I'm single. I'm moderately employed, depending on the moment. Like, what can you do?
What can you do? You know, but you know what you can do is you can look at this broken chair, because Rillian immediately is like, ugh, like, there you go, you vile engine of sorcery. Yeah. And it's like, again, wish we'd have known a little bit more about the mechanics of this chair. But the chair's broken, and he's like, hey, you're a Narnian Marshwiggle, huh?
Yeah, he looks up from this, like, just outburst of violence, and it's like, oh, hey, do I know you?
Hey, look at that. And, like,
hey, we're from the same hometown.
They're like, you know about Narnia? He's like, Narnia? Like, of course I know Narnia. I'm Rillian, the prince, you know, son of Caspian, you know, that guy. And they're like, oh. Hey, we're looking for you.
Oh, cool. The whole plot of this book has been about this.
Hey, neat. Who'd have thought? And like, he's like, who are these two? And they're like, oh, we were sent by Aslan. We're from another world. And he's like, oh, cool.
Yeah. I mean, Eustace throws in like, hey, I know your dad. I sailed with him to the end of the world.
See, okay. The phrasing of this sentence is strange. Because he goes, we were sent by Aslan himself from beyond the world's end to seek your highness. I am Eustace, who sailed with him to the island of Ramandu. There is no reference to Caspian here, who is who he sailed with to Ramandu. The him that is in this sentence is Aslan. I am nitpicking here, because obviously C.S. Lewis is a literary great for a reason.
But
that sentence bothered me. Because the pronoun game does not work when the pronoun does not reference someone who is previously mentioned.
Yeah, no, him would, like, the actual structure of these paragraphs, him would refer to Aslan in a, like, grammatical structure.
But it's obviously referring to Caspian.
Because Aslan, like, Caspian's mentioned like three paragraphs before that, but like you're right. Oh, like, that doesn't make sense.
It's a nit to pick, but that's what we're here for. But I read that and I was like, I don't like it. That bothered me.
Literary great, my butt. Down with C.S. Lewis. This is the straw. The camel's back is now broken.
Listen here, you writing idiot. What were you, an English professor? Oh, you were? Oh, okay. Never mind then.
Maybe if you had an inkling, you would know that.
Maybe you should send your books to an editor. But all that to say, we move past my tangential, anger outburst where I've destroyed a silver chair of grammar. And he goes, oh, great. Hey, is my dad still alive? And they're like, well, actually, he just left on a boat, which means he's probably dead, because he is old and it's a boat. And he just goes, oh, totally. How long has it been? And they're like, 10 years. He's like, 10 years.
Wow. 10 years.
He's been dead. I like how
the amount of time is the bigger deal than his dad's about to die. That's
like, yeah, that tracks.
Like, oh, like, yeah, my dad in boats. You know how it be.
They're like, yep, Caspian. He's actually 200 years old. Don't know how he hasn't died yet, but, you know, he's got that Dunedain blood. Wait, that's a different book. And so he's like, wow, man, I've been chanted for a really long time. He's like, follow my lead. And he kicks open the door. And that's how the chapter ends, Chase.
Yeah. Because why would you leave the cliffhanger on, like, the actual moment of interest rather than the moment right before the moment of interest?
This is when you have him kick open the door and they see the queen with the two gnomes.
Kick open the door and they saw her. That's like, or even like, just that.
He kicked open the door and saw a flash of poison green, like something. Yeah. What did they see beyond the door?
A cliffhanger should be a hook for the next chapter. It's like, it should be your clickbait for reading the next chapter.
Yeah. You'll never believe what Rillian saw when he kicked open this door.
Yeah. Your email subject line is Rillian opened the door and you wouldn't believe what he saw next.
How to lose 10 silver chairs.
But how to break a silver chair and a spell in one swing.
Wow, look at that. That's great. We could write for, like, Vogue. I'm for it. But Chase,
C.S. Lewis trapped by this podcaster.
Just this. It's us over and over again each week. But Chase, do you have anything else before we dive further up and further in?
I don't think so.
I believe you're here to talk about the Indianapolis Colts.
Yes. I'm a Colts fan now. Don't tell anyone I've ever known being literally from, I can see the Cowboys stadium from my high school. But I am here to talk about Colts stuff though. That's what I have written down in my notes.
Oh, C-U-L-T-S, misread the notes. My bad.
Yeah. Colt stuff, baby horses, right? I am watching Yellowstone right now. So a lot of what Rillian says throughout this chapter and kind of his whole vibe has really, like, left the cult vibe, like group of people blindly committed to a leader vibe. And it is that kind of stuff. It's his blind belief in everything that the queen has told him. It's that her word is law to him. The idea that to question at all is to be unfaithful, and he would never think of questioning his leader's words. The fact that she is the only one he trusts. And this is, like, I don't know about you, but I enjoy a cult documentary from time to time. They have one of the more interesting Netflix trends. And, like, this is like a very repeated pattern. And I will just say, like, the, like, reaction to it is fair because, look, truth should be able to be tested and shown to be true. Like, just taking someone's word for it, just believing because you were told to believe, isn't actually a stable foundation for belief. And I know that might sound wild coming from people who are pretty openly in the Christian world, but, like, we believe that questioning and doubting and investigating your beliefs are important to actually believing. We think that those are acts of faith and faithfulness, not acts of, like, rejection. Because if you think that by testing your truth that it will be proven untrue, then you don't actually believe it. Is kind of where I stand. Really just wanted to point out the very obvious cult vibes of Rillian throughout this.
Totally. Mine is the power of a name. And really, this is a theme for not just this chapter, but also the next one, and a theme throughout the Narnia series as a whole, whereas the name of Aslan carries weight. You know, if you look in scripture, there is a trend of names being so meaningful. Generally, names carry identity, they carry power, especially when you hear a name, it generally brings up a connotation, right? When you hear Aslan, it is either striking comfort, striking, you know, valor and courage, or it's striking fear, right? It's striking, you know, overwhelmingness. It's, you know, you have an association with the name. When you hear the name Jesus, you have a connotation, whether that's positive or negative. When you hear, you know, names, generally you're going to, you know, think of something, even your own name. When people are like, hey, like Kel is coming, Chase is coming to this event, they have a connotation with this, you know, mindset of going, oh, Chase is going to be here, that means blank is going to happen, right? And this is a common trope throughout fiction, throughout, you know, life as a whole, is that names not just have power in terms of what their connotation is for a social interaction, but also in terms of they have literal power to break spells, to, you know, hold a person to a contract, to, you know, to have power over someone is to have power over their name, kind of thing. This is a something, a trend you see in, you know, things like Name of the Wind, and Aragorn. You know, you have, there is power and weight in knowing and understanding and grasping names. And that's why I love that, you know, what is the thing that they eventually follow? It's the name Aslan. And in the next chapter, you're going to see a character hold on to the name of Aslan more so than anything else. And I think that's important for us to remember, is like, there is weight and power to the names. But Chase, though I don't remember much, though I don't know a lot, you did tell me in the notes that I'm supposed to mention the podcast and where people can find it. And I believe you wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And well, you've never led me astray. What you need to understand
is there's no other podcasts.
Yeah. You've never led me astray. So all I know is that you can find all our podcasts anywhere where podcasts are found, Audible, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it. And, you know, it's the way that you can help break the curse of this podcast being around. Give it a 5-star rating, you know, leave us a review, and you know, tell us about how many times you'd like to see the Silver Chair mentioned. Go follow us on Instagram at the Chronicles of Podcast, and you know, we'll let you know when things are coming up. And yeah, we're excited for the new year. New year, new me, new Silver Chair, you know.
Yeah, we do need a new Silver Chair now that it's broken.
Our chairs are all suspiciously mangled.
Yeah. Well, after reading this chapter, I immediately went and cut all the chairs in my house in half. So I don't have
It's the only thing you can do. But until then, Chase, until you find another chair, have a great day.
Have a great life to you, too. The weird alternate timeline where this was a successful podcast and we had to do spinoff shows.
If we were willing to compromise on our, like, you know, ethics a little bit, I think we'd be a very successful podcast.